Inside Your Mind is my company, Inside Your Mind Limited, insideyourmind.com or .co.nz. And one of the things that I teach is neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP for short. So just to give an overview of what that is. So neuro is the mind and the body and our senses through which we're constantly interpreting stuff that's coming in from outside of us. So that's the neuro part. The linguistic is language, but it's not just verbal language. It could be anything that conveys a message. So that could be changing breathing, changing skin tone, how we move our eyes when we talk, body language, gestures, etc. And then programming is how we program ourselves to do what we do through repeated habits, or by how we've been brought up, how we've been programmed through our parents' values and beliefs. Through
so we don't mean programming in a sinister way.
No. It's like we've all been programmed; otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do anything. So we program with something like tying shoelaces, and then over several practices, you know how to tie your shoelaces without thinking. It's become a program that you don't even think about. You just go, "Oh, I've got lace up shoes, tie my shoelaces," and from that, then you can tie knots in boats. You can wrap up presents and tie nice gift tags on, and it's all the same program that you've learned how to tie something, and that's just an example. So we program by parents, by teachers, by media, by friends as we get older. Sometimes we learn programs that aren't really applicable anymore, or they're not serving us. And so what I do is help people to undo those programs so that they can live a better life, to change the programs.
Right. Yeah. So what sort of things might people want to change?
Well, I might want to change something like a limiting belief that they have. So if somebody has a belief about something, it filters all their experiences through that belief. So somebody might, like quite a common one, unfortunately it's a common one, is people have a belief that they're not good enough. Now, not everybody, but a lot of the population, in my experience, have a belief that I'm not good enough. And consciously, they'll go, yeah, I am good enough, you know. But unconsciously, they've picked it up somewhere that they're not good enough. Mm. And probably sometimes people might have actually said that to them, but often it's more about people's behaviour towards them that they believe that. And so with that belief, they filter everything that's coming in from outside through the five senses, and it confirms what they already believe. And so what happens is they experience the same kind of experience, which reinforces to them that they're not good enough, over years and years and years sometimes, until when they change the belief, then they change their life. So as an example, I used to work in a place in – I had a room that I used to rent in a place in Papatoetoe, where all the other – there was a lot of counsellors in there, and I just rented a room. And so the other counsellors used to deal mainly with women who had been abused. And so they'd come in and they'd have like months of counselling, and then off they'd go. And one of the units, it was three units that they had, and they did the counselling in two of the units. And the third one was set up as like a rescue home where women could go if they were in dire straits and needed to leave in an emergency.
Yeah.
And it was always full. There was always somebody in there, and then they'd go out again, and then months later they'd be back again, because they didn't change the beliefs about not being good enough, or the belief that they deserved whatever they got. So these beliefs can come from often early childhood, or sometimes, you know, I've experienced people say that it was developed in the womb or even before that, which I know sounds weird if you haven't come across it. And so when we change that belief, it's like instead of keep having repeated incidences that reflect back to the person that they're not good enough, then they start experiencing life without that, and they don't have those experiences anymore. And it's a bit hard for people to kind of understand, but it's kind of like they're sitting in a bubble of a belief, and they don't know that they're in a bubble. As compared to, for example, I'm wearing glasses. I've got the sunglasses, right?
Yes. Yep.
So if I take the sunglasses off, everything's brighter, right? So I know I've got glasses on. And so in the same way, I have a belief that everything happens for the best. So even though something might happen, it might seem like a disaster at the time, I can go back and go, well, everything happens for the best. And then I'm sure other people have found this. Then, you know, it might be weeks, months, or even years later, they can look back and go, yeah, well, if that hadn't have happened, you know, I wouldn't be here now, and I'm better off now than I was then in some way. So that's a belief that I've adopted that I know about. So I can take the glasses on and off. I can take the belief on and off because I've created it, basically. But the other type, like you're sitting in a bubble of a belief, but you don't know you're in the bubble until somebody pricks the bubble. And an example of that, I'll give you an example. So I was on a course years ago, and we had to walk the length of a football field on our own, and with each step we had to say how we'd behaved out of fear or guilt or fear or guilt. So I started off with my first foot, and I went, "Oh, I make myself guilty because I don't spend enough time with my dogs. I make myself guilty because I don't spend enough time with my friends." And so on I went, and I got to about 15 steps, and then I thought, and then the next one was, "Oh, I make myself guilty because I spend too much time with the dogs. I make myself guilty because I spend too much." And I'll go, "That's for you. That's the opposite of what I just got before." So I thought, "Oh, maybe I'm not doing the exercise properly." So I went into the woman that was running the course, and I said, "Oh, look, I've just started the exercise, and this is what happened. You know, I started off saying, I was guilty of this and then the other, and then I got the opposite." And she just stopped, and she looks at me, and she said, "So you never do anything right." And I just burst into tears because I was always told that as a kid.
All right.
But I didn't realize that I actually believed it.
Yeah.
Because if anybody said to me, "Oh, you don't do anything right," as an adult, I'd go, "What do you mean? I do lots of things right." But on an unconscious level, it was a belief that was there. And so then I was like, "Oh, okay, well, that's really interesting. It's still there." So and then I got an experience of that just on this course, just by saying one thing and then the opposite, you know, 5 minutes later.
There was a big penny dropping moment.
Yeah, and it was like I would have been hit with a piece of 4x2, you know. and sometimes that happens with people. They're like, "Oh, my God." And it's not that they consciously believe that. It's their unconscious mind. And just to say a bit more about the conscious and the unconscious mind. So our conscious mind can fathom about 7 ± 2 bits of information at once, you know. So
that's why phone numbers are usually 7 digits long.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if we're in a familiar situation, we might be able to cope with 9. If we're not, it might only be 5 or something, you know, or less. But our unconscious mind is your body, and that's processing everything on an unconscious level, and taking everything in and storing it. So your unconscious, people think their unconscious mind is just when they're asleep, but it's not. It's like during the day. Your unconscious mind makes sure your heart beats, makes sure you can breathe, although you can breathe consciously, makes sure your kidneys function, your liver functions, all that. You don't have to walk around going, "Oh, please beat hard, please beat, please function," you know. Yeah. It's just happening in the background. So your unconscious mind is what keeps you alive, and it's the storehouse of all memories. But unfortunately, I mean, that's the good part. It keeps you alive. The downside is that it stays at about the age of 7. So if you think about children, until they're about age 7, you can tell them anything and they believe it.
Yeah.
And then they get to about 7, 8 and they start going, "Really? You know, I'm not sure about that. You know, I think Dad's telling me lies," or,
yeah,
you know, they become more objective about what they've been told. But before that, they just store everything. So if you think about what kids have been told up to about the age of 7, sometimes just a casual remark that's, you know, maybe said in as a joke can be lodged in somebody's unconscious mind and produce these behaviours years later, or these limiting beliefs years later, you know?
One of the things that you were saying earlier, you were talking about how we filter things.
Yeah.
And I know this is something, like, you've talked about this before and I kind of jumped on it as being quite significant, but I was also imagining you were saying, you know, you believe that things generally turn out for the better, and I know there's people out there who would really want to argue with that.
Yeah. But as I say, that's a belief that I've just adopted because it helps me.
Yeah.
You know, if the opposite would be everything's crap and it turns out like awful. It's not very healthy, you know?
Yeah, something we've talked about before is that if you have that kind of belief, or either belief, that your brain, which necessarily always filters out because we get too much info, so it filters out the stuff it thinks you don't need and gives you the stuff it thinks you do need.
Yeah.
And if you have a belief that everything turns to crap all the time, you'll keep seeing evidence of that, and you won't notice, and you'll miss out on opportunities even. You won't notice the good stuff.
Yeah. And that's a part of the brain at the back of the brain called the reticular activating system. So it's at the bottom of the brain stem. And what it does is shows us things that support our values and beliefs, and which again reinforces what I said, is that it shows us what we already believe. So for example, I think I've used this before, you know, you might think, oh, I'm going to get a new car. So you think, what am I going to get? I don't know, I'll get a Toyota Corolla, right, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then because you're looking at that car, you suddenly see all these Toyota Corollas everywhere. Or it might be something, you know, it might be a Mini. No, not as common as a Toyota Corolla. So I might get a new Mini. And then you start seeing Minis everywhere. And you go, God, I didn't realise how many Minis there were. Because now your brain's showing you what you're already focused on.
Yeah.
But I'll do an experiment with the listeners. It's one that I do on the course. And it's quite interesting. And that is to look – you look around and say, I'll say, let's have people look around – and notice everything around them that's blue, right? So you can do it. Look around. Yeah, look behind you as well. Look everywhere. Notice everything that's blue.
Yeah.
You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. And so now if I asked you to tell me everything that's around you that's blue, you'd be able to tell me, right?
Yeah.
So without looking around, how many things around you are white?
Well, I can tell you the ones that are right in front of me because I can see them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it.
Yeah, so because I said look at everything that's blue, everybody's going, okay, blue car, blue bottom of the building, you know, a bit of blue on the T-shirt, bit of blue on the logo, oh, blue on my sweatshirt, blue on my dungarees, blah, blah, blah. And then you go, okay, so what's white? And they go, oh, shit, I never looked at anything that was white. I only look for blue. So that's what they're looking for, so that's what they see. And the white things or whatever other colour you choose, they might remember one thing. And even things that they're wearing, they go, oh, yeah, I'm wearing white, you know. They don't notice. So it's an example of how that part of your brain, that RIS, focusing on what you already believe, what you value, what's important to you, and omits everything else. And this is why, you know, you can have, you know, let's say a murder investigation, for want of a better thing, why not on a Monday morning, and the police come in and they interview everybody that was present, and they interview everybody and they get 20 different versions of what happens.
Yeah.
So it's not because people are being awkward or telling lies, unless one of them is a murderer, of course. It's just that people perceive things so differently. And so our perception of life depends on already our values and beliefs and memories and a whole lot of things, and not necessarily on what's happening there at the time.
So isn't it the case that the police would be very suspicious if they have a bunch of witnesses who have identical stories?
Yes. Well, I think they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they'll be like, this only ever happens if people have got together.
And someone
beforehand.
Else say, oh, you know, we saw the person and they run away and they had a, you know, they were like 5'10 and they were really big build and they had a brown sweatshirt on, and somebody else say, oh, I thought they were more about 6'2 and I thought the sweatshirt was more of a sort of khaki colour, you know. And then it's like, how do you pick out who's telling the truth? Not that people are telling lies, they're telling their truth, which is another thing, you know, is like, what is truth?
Are we going there, are we?
Well, it wasn't intended. I wanted to talk about stress and anxiety. How did you get onto this, Aaron?
Well, I gave you control of this. I actually gave you control of the interview because my mic wasn't working.
Okay. Sure. So it's like... Yeah, well, I forgot what I was saying now.
Truth.
Truth, yeah. So what is truth? It's like everybody can have their truth according to their values and beliefs and say, well, this is the truth. And unfortunately, there is no one truth.
A great place for discussing what you think the truth is the internet, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody, that's what I mean. You've got millions of people. Like, there's only 7 billion people on the planet and everybody's going to have their own truth. Another example is, I was just writing about it yesterday. So you'll remember when you're on my course, I have this thing that I do, and it's, I'll say to people, I want you to just notice what comes into your mind in response to a sentence. So I'm asking them to think about what pictures I make in the mind, what sounds I make in the mind, what feelings I might have in the body, whether there's any tastes or smells, and what they're saying to themselves in response to a sentence, right? And the sentence is, I took my dog for a walk at 6 o'clock this morning and he started barking. I took my dog for a walk at 6 o'clock this morning and he started barking. Now, it doesn't really matter what the sentence is. That one's just easy to remember. But the interesting thing about that is, at 6 o'clock in the morning in winter, it's dark. At 6 o'clock in summer, it's light. So I get different responses from people in the summer and the winter.
What do you ask them after you've told them to think
about
that?
So then I say to them, okay, so I'll go to the first person. So what did you have when I said that sentence? And somebody will say, I was really pissed off because it was 6 o'clock in the morning and you were waking me up, right? And I go, okay, cool. What's the next person? And they go, oh, well, I imagine me taking my dog for a walk. And I go, well, I said, I took my dog for a walk. And they go, oh, yeah. I said, it was supposed to be about me. And they go, yeah, but I took my dog for a walk. Okay, cool. And then another one will say, oh, I imagined you walking in a park. And I go, okay. And what sort of dog did I have? And they go, oh, it was a Rottweiler, or it was a white fluffy thing, or it was a poodle, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's how they've got that. And I go, another person will say, oh, I just heard the dog barking. I felt a bit scared because there might be somebody behind you at 6 o'clock. Because it's dark.
Right.
Right? So I can guarantee, look, I've done this with 600 people, and I haven't gone over every 600 person, every person of the 600. Everyone that I've asked has had a different interpretation, and that's one sentence.
See, you live quite near me, so I've actually seen you take your dog
for
a walk.
That's right. And so when people know me, they'll go, oh, I saw you walking rags on the beach.
Right.
And you go, okay. And so this was, what was I doing with this? Oh, I'm recording a an online program, and so I wanted to know what to do that process with somebody else, and then I've got a picture of rags after and a couple of pictures of Raglan, so they can see what it looks like where I'm walking him, because they usually want to know, well, what did happen, you know. So that's one sentence, Aaron.
Yeah.
And so imagine having a whole conversation like we're having now, and people are interpreting in their own ways to find their truth. The only truth in that really is that I didn't walk my dog at 6 o'clock this morning. I walked him at 8 o'clock this morning.
But yeah, well, because the possibilities are actually endless when it comes to the detail of it.
And the thing is, I try and pick something that's got that where they can access most of the senses, so they can picture me walking a dog, they can hear the sound because I said he's barking.
Yeah.
They can feel what they feel like. So some people felt a bit anxious or pissed off because he was barking. They might, you know, smell or taste the ocean. Hopefully they can't taste the dog. And they, you know, they might be saying something to themselves about it. Like if some of them said, what the hell, why can't you keep your dog quiet at that time in the morning? Right?
Yeah.
So it's one, you could use anything now where all the senses are available. Like you could say, I went to the supermarket and I bought a whole lot of shopping, you know, and people could make up the details of that. And that, they'll do that according to their own perceptions of stuff. So I think we need to realise that our perception and our truth is, every person has a different truth. And when you're trying to argue about truth, it's like a lost cause.
And that's not a wishy-washy statement saying everyone has their own truth.
No.
It's just the reality. And never mind if you think the media's feeding you anything or anything like that. You're feeding yourself a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can go and look at something and gain information and then form your own truth. And then that can be changed in a few hours with something else that comes up that smashes everything you believed because you found something else now. So it's not like it's set in concrete either. You know, things that we believed to be true years ago are no longer true. You know, science has evolved and things have changed. So it's not like it's a static thing of what truth is.
And it's interesting to talk about this because there's been plenty of things lately that people have been discussing that everyone's got very strong feelings about. And it's in the news, and we're very sure, and people are arguing from very strong positions, very determined that, that their truth is the truth, what
and
they've
that's,
heard.
It's like arguing for black and white. You know, there's lots of shades of grey, apparently 50.
So we hear.
Shades of grey in the middle. So.
Well, that's your truth, Steph.
Well, I haven't read that, but I might do sometime.
Okay.
So, things aren't black and white because there's always shades of grey in the middle. Again, my perception. And while we can be arguing for something, we then don't let in other people's perceptions, which might colour our own judgment.
So can we tie this in with what you wanted to talk about, which was stress and anxiety, because the stuff that's been in the news a lot in the last few weeks and currently has people have had strong reactions to and strong opinions about, and they've had their own truths, as we've discovered now. Mm. But also it's causing people, I think it's, has it been magnified by the fact that a lot of the news is putting people into a state of, it's triggering them and, to some degree or another?
I don't watch the news because it's just fear porn as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's that's fine, because that's the result. That
exactly.
People, it's stuff that is making people afraid.
It's making people afraid.
Yeah, and when you're afraid, are you going to be able to think about this whole thing that you have your own truth?
No. That's the thing. It's like, you know, like I've got my dog here, for those of you who don't know. I've just been for a walk. And I used to be a dog trainer years ago. I used to be an HR manager at a power company. And in my spare time with another friend, we used to train dogs for competitive obedience and just to be obedient dogs.
Okay.
And we always wanted the dogs to be happy because you can't train a dog when they're stressed.
Right.
And likewise, people can't learn when they're stressed. So when I have courses, I always create a really relaxed environment. You know, there's no tables because people are stressed about, you know, they're taken back to school, and if they had a bad time at school, they don't like that.
Yeah.
So we have a relaxed environment. We have music on, so it's as relaxed as people can be so they can learn. So when people are stressed by watching the news and they're in a state of fear, then they won't learn anything new. They'll just learn whatever has been told to them to produce the fear. So, so stress can come from outside of us. So, we, you know, just being in a really cluttered environment and trying to work can cause stress because, you know, you've got your eyes open all the time. And if you can see rubbish and crap everywhere, then, you know, that's not a good environment. It's a stressful environment to be trying to work in for a start off.
Yeah.
But then we can produce anxiety in our bodies by how we interpret what's happening outside. And if we're bombarded with negative messages the whole time, it's really difficult to let anything else in. So I'm not saying that what you see is good or bad. It's just how do you feel when you've watched it? You know, do you feel uplifted when you've watched the news, or do you feel like you want to go out and slit your wrist, you know, or somewhere in between? And if it's not uplifting, well, why put yourself through that?
Well, so there's a belief that you have to be informed and you have to know what's going on. And, of course, the whole Russian-Ukrainian thing happening at the moment, us in New Zealand knowing anything about that, it's not, obviously not going to make much of a difference to their situation.
No. And the other thing is, how do you know that what you've been told is accurate? You know, it's like, well, are you trusting the media to tell you the truth, or could you go somewhere else and do your own research and find out whether the media is telling you the truth or whether they're telling you a pack of lies? So it's... Oh, it's a difficult kind of thing, but it comes back to this. At the end of it, at the end of watching it, do you feel uplifted or do you feel miserable? And if you feel miserable, then where can you go and look and check for yourself that what you're hearing is accurate? And there won't be one source. You'd probably have to look at a lot of sources. And people say, oh, I haven't got the time. And I go, yeah, but you've got a time to watch the news for an hour. What about if you use that hour to go and look for yourself and find your own information?
But I think for a lot of people, the thought that the news they're getting is completely unreliable is also a source of stress and anxiety.
Yeah, exactly, because I think you're absolutely right that now it's got to the point where people just don't know. They go, what do you believe? Everything I believed is now...
That's very loud, isn't it? I'm sure
it
that's
is.
Coming...
Go away. It's a bike, yeah.
I'm sure that came over the bike.
What do I believe now? Because things that I used to believe seem to be no longer true.
Well, see, it's interesting you're talking about the news because I've literally just stopped. I used to start my show and I would read the news.
Yeah.
And we've just got a bulletin in now so I don't have to read it.
All right.
Because it became, because that was the first thing I did when I started the show.
Right.
And then that became my focus for the morning.
Right.
Was what I'd done there. And I always feel the need to explain things properly because I'm unimpressed with the reporting and the news and right. it doesn't give enough insight.
Right.
So that became my big focus. And the show's supposed to be about Raglan and what people in Raglan are doing and, yeah. and what my guests are doing. And it wasn't, and it's not good for me to be put in that stressed state.
To start the day like that, start the day being stressed and then it's all downhill.
Yeah. But people still want the news, so I feel obliged to give them something.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said they like me putting my opinion in it. I'm sure some people didn't like me putting my opinion into right. it. But
yeah, because if it's news, then it should be objective and factual. Because
but it can be anyway.
Pardon?
It's really hard to make your news properly factual and properly objective.
That's fine. But then if you get the facts and you deliver the facts, then you say, and my opinion is,
yeah,
I think that's fine. Oh.
Don't worry about the plastic bag. It's the motorbike's more annoying. Just throw it away.
I can't throw it away.
Well, no, I'll get it later. But it'll rustle.
I'll keep it in my. I'll keep it
see, this
between
is
my legs. There.
Outside studio. there's a
plastic bag just blew across the grass, and I just grabbed hold of it and stuck it between my legs there for a time being.
Because I thought if you're going to sit there holding it, it'll crinkle through the rest
exactly,
of the show.
Exactly. I'll keep my legs together so it doesn't make a noise. Sorry.
That's
so
all.
Yeah. So if you're presenting facts basically. Then you say my opinion is well that's fine because then you're giving your opinion and people can accept that or reject it. But if you're saying these are the facts and they're actually not the facts or there's other facts that they're omitting, then is that accurate?
It's more honest to and therefore I think more objective to admit your biases.
Yeah,
to announce where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because
does the 6 o'clock news do that?
Well, no, because they are the news.
Right. The news.
Yeah, that is the news.
The news
you need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not, and that's their posture they strike.
Right.
And most of the mainstream media does try to strike that objective posture, and I think that most of the time they're trying to be objective, but they're human beings and they have values and assumptions, and they're also part of a structure that delivers some information to them easily and other information not so easily.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of biases at work.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so again, yeah. just going back to the stress and anxiety. So I'm working on a course at the moment for people with stress and anxiety, which is, as I said before, probably only 7 billion people possible target audience at the moment. But the anxiety then comes from being bombarded with negative information, and not only that, but how we process that. How we program ourselves then to feel that stress in our body, because, you know, for example, talking to yourself negatively about, I don't know, the news and what's happening in the world can produce anxiety in your body. You know, watching the news can produce anxiety in your body, and I think a lot of people have become desensitized to how they feel. You know, well, they've had to switch off how they feel because it's so awful. And so that they don't. Then what happens is when they go outside, they don't see the good that's in the world. They don't see people caring for each other. They don't notice the sun shining and the tides turning and things like that. They're just really focused on, oh, look, you know, there's another robbery or there's, you know, something else that's happened that's negative. So it colours their judgment in terms of what they perceive in the rest of the world.
And that's probably the biggest bias that the news introduces, which is not a bias that anyone ever talks about, but because it's necessarily the negative stuff, it changes your worldview. And I've seen lots of people say, oh, the world's a terrible place, it's just a terrible, all these terrible things happening.
Yeah.
But if you did an experiment, if you got all the things that were in the news and chose a point 100 kilometers eastward from that point on the globe,
yeah,
was there something, I almost guarantee you that at that point there was no bad news happening
right
at that time.
Exactly.
Right? So it's... It's like it's a carefully devised system. I heard someone say once, do you know there's people out there who gather all the worst information they could possibly find and they all bring it to you
yeah.
and then they tell you that there's something wrong with you if you don't pay attention to it.
Right.
That makes it sound like a conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just exactly. say that as for the perspective in a joking way, but But the reality is it does colour our view of the world.
It does. And then anxiety, we cause anxiety ourselves. So it's self-induced. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to hear that because they go, oh, I'm not causing myself anxiety. I don't all talk like that, though. I just feel it, you know. But it's like what we're doing then is we're taking that information in from outside, forming an opinion about it or a belief about it. So beliefs are just opinions that have become solidified, basically. And then they worry about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, worry is a kind of a way of taking the worst case scenario and focusing all your attention on it. So then they start worrying, and they do this by thinking about the worst case scenario, by wondering how it's going to impact them, by thinking about, you know, what if they lose their job, what if this, what if that, and they're all negative things, not positive things. I'm not saying that some of those things aren't necessarily true, but they cause anxiety in the body.
Yeah.
And then in the mind, and then it gets worse because then the body's feeling terrible, and so then they start doing it all over again. And this can start from the time they get up in the morning. You know, they'll be looking for, wonder what the news is now. Let's put the news on and see what's happened overnight. You know, oh, and then who wants to start their day like that? I mean, if you want to really reduce your anxiety, my primary recommendation is stop watching the news. Because, or just watch, sometimes, I mean, I haven't watched it for months, but probably actually a year now.
It's been a good year to keep away from the media, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes, when I used to watch it, they used to have something that was on about 3 minutes to 7 that was something positive. So I just put it on for those 3 minutes and listen to that, you know.
Well, they call that the human interest stories, and it's not considered to be real news.
Right.
By the people who... to tell us what real news is.
Right, yeah, exactly. And who tells you what real news is? So, yeah, that's what I recommend. I think it's, you know, I always think that if I need to know something, somebody will let me know if it applies to me.
Well, yeah. All the COVID stuff's been hard to miss, hard to avoid.
And it's like it's just going on and on and on and on and on and on and on. So, you know, I'd say to people, get outside, go and have a look at some trees and go and have a look at the beach or wherever you live and get outside for a bit for a start.
And really look at it. Don't go to the beach and think about what was
exactly
on the news.
Exactly, yeah. So it's like you can still go to the beach and go, or walk around town and go, oh, look at all the cracks in the pavement. But it's like being out and focusing on what you see. You know, I mean, look, where else in New Zealand could we be sitting out under some trees having a radio interview?
Yeah, I know. This is great. It's a great little spot.
And then, you know, there's people driving up and down town. I've just been on the beach with my dog. The tide's out a bit and it's beautiful. It's flat calm. The sun's shining, you know. And look at your environment. Instead of looking at your feet or looking down. So the other thing is when people are looking down, they're often talking to themselves, which is fine if you're saying good things. But if you're just muttering to yourself about how bad the world is, then that's no good. You need to look up. When we even say, things are looking up, when things look brighter or things look brighter.
So you
don't, you don't see brightness and things looking up when you're looking at your feet.
You can make things look up by looking up.
By looking up, that's right.
Look up and look around. Like I can feel, I have started noticing the difference with that now.
Yeah.
When you're walking along, you're looking down and then you look up and you're like, look at that. There's the trees and the sky and the sun.
And so it's about looking up but also focusing on what you see rather than just looking up and going, I still feel miserable but I'm looking at the sky. You know, you've got to be looking up and looking and engaging with what you see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And engaging with other people as well, you know.
I think that's the thing. Like whatever we're focusing on has an emotional component to it, and it's a bit hard for a guy, especially guys like me. I don't notice my emotional reaction to things until I get to be middle aged and have chronic health problems. Right.
That's exactly
because that's kind of where it goes.
Yeah. And so that's it. People have focused on other things, like things that they're not only important, but often they can't do anything about them.
Yeah.
So then there's the worry about, you know, I should be doing something. What can I do? Well, I can't really do anything. So that creates another sort of cycle of anxiety as well, you know.
And I think I was just reading something yesterday that also if we're watching the news and we see something that's bad, we feel obliged to empathize with it. Mm. Otherwise, we're not a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do anything about it, so we can at least empathise with them and feel bad with them.
Yeah.
And we don't say we feel bad with them, but yeah. It doesn't actually help them. It doesn't help us.
No.
And it possibly takes away from actually doing something constructive.
All it does is keep you in fear, and when you're in fear, you're easily controlled.
Yeah, we do know. Some people won't like hearing that, but we do know that a lot of politics now understands that if they trigger people's fear states, they'll be able to manipulate a certain part of the population into voting a certain way.
Right.
That's pretty well acknowledged now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of studies have been done on it. And again, but we don't learn that much when we're in fear either. So we don't think for ourselves when we're in fear.
Yeah.
You know, think again about dogs that are fearful. You know, all I want to do is either run away or bite you. You know, and it's one or the other. And, you know, people go, oh, the dog's horrible because it bit you. Well, the dog's fearful. Or it runs around with its tail between its legs.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we don't have tails between our legs, humans are the same. We don't learn when we're in fear. That's why I said when I'm running training courses, it's set up so people feel relaxed because then they can learn. You know, an example of that is the reason I do that is because when I used to work in the power company, I was the HR manager, a lot of the guys that worked there were, well, we had a lot of linemen, and these are like macho guys, you know, I think they're macho anyway. They're just teddy bears underneath it all. But they used to think they were macho, so I let them think that. But they often left school at 14, you know, maybe bummed around for a couple of years, and then they applied for a lineman apprentice, not a trainee lineman job.
Yeah.
And they had to train for 2 years, but they were basically learning on the job. And so when I first went there, they didn't have a training room or anything like that. They just had the boardroom. And the boardroom had these massive tables, like each table was about 2 meters square. And you couldn't really move them because, you know. And I thought, how am I going to set this up? So we had the tables kind of aligned against the walls away so people could sit in the middle. But I remember the first one I run, it was on assertiveness training. And one of the guys came in early, came in about 8 o'clock as I was setting the room up. And he said, oh, Stephanie, I just want to ask you something. And I said, yes, Mark, what's something? He goes, well, he says, we don't have to stand at the room and talk in front of people, do we?
Mm.
And I says, no, Mark, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, you know? And this is how they were. You could not have a room that looked anything like a schoolroom.
Yeah.
Because it took them back, they were anchored to those times of high levels of stress at school when they didn't do very well at school. Most of the guys didn't do very well at school.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I left there, I was asked to do quite a lot of training courses in the electrical industry. And I'd say, well, who's it for? And they go, well, for linemen. And I go, okay, well, we need to do this other course first. And they go, well, what's that? And I go, well, we need to change their beliefs about learning first because otherwise they're not going to learn anything. And so I'd have this flip chart and it'd say on it things like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I'm too old to learn. I didn't learn when I was at school and I can't learn now. And all these beliefs that these guys have told me over the years. And I go, how many of you believe this one? And they believe all of them, right?
Right, okay, yeah.
So then I'd have to do some stuff to help them change their mind. So I'd say, how many of you have learnt the words to a song when you're just driving along listening to it in your van or your truck? And they go, oh, yeah, I have. And I go, did you think that you were going to learn the tune or and the song, or did it just happen naturally? And they go, well, it just happened just one day. I found myself, I knew the words, you know. And I go, do you play – a lot of these guys played musical instruments, often guitar.
Yeah.
Did you learn how to play the guitar? Yeah, okay. And a lot of them could sing. Can you sing? Yeah, okay. So there's at least 9 different types of intelligences. So there's musical intelligence. There's social intelligence, like people who are good with people. You know, there's spiritual intelligence, like people who are kind of like gurus and, you know, have high spiritual values. There's mathematical intelligence and linguistic intelligence, which are the only two that are measured in school. There's spatial intelligence, so people who are good with like architecture. So you're an architect. So they can, you know, conceptualize a whole house, you know. I can't do that. There's physical intelligence. So people who are good with things and in moving their bodies. So these guys were really good at that. That anything yeah. practical, you know, the number 8 fencing wire mentality. Yeah, we can fix this, you know, no problem.
Yep.
Really good at that. And so once they knew that there were all these different types of intelligences, and they had at least five or six, then we'd go through over the list again, and I go, okay, how many of these do you believe now? And they go, well, I don't believe any of them now. Okay.
Right.
Now you're ready to learn.
So, and that was all to stop anxiety?
That was to help them. Well, I'd set it up so it wasn't like a classroom, but I knew that they had these beliefs because so many of them had told me. You know, because I've been working with them for years.
Yeah.
And they're the same linemen, you know, the young guys.
Yeah.
And so that was then like a pre-course to the course. And then they were ready to learn. So then it was like, oh, okay, well, I'm actually quite smart because I can do this and I can do that. And, you know, I can play guitar. Yeah, I did learn to play guitar. And, you know, help them focus on what they can learn because they just were told that they can't learn or that they're thick or something.
The underlying message that a lot of people get coming out of, they've come out of school and they haven't had academic success, then, yeah.
And then we get, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Which brings us all the way back to what I was talking about to start with.
Or no, it's not just blame school, but there'll be parents, be parents telling the kids that they're crap as well.
Yeah, because they come on with a report and they go, well, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do better than that.
Or the parents are acting out their own inadequacies.
Yeah. Or the parents have high expectations, like they want them to be a, you know, I don't know, a doctor, a lawyer.
Well, that's
or something
the other
like
end
that.
Of it too. Yeah. You can't live up to that.
And then they're not living up to that, so then they're not good enough, you know. So they might never have been told that, but they might have picked that up from behaviour.
Yeah, in some ways, that's deeper than being told.
Exactly.
If you're clearly told it, you might have the chance to reject it.
Yeah.
So for people with, do you have general advice for general stress and anxiety aside from don't watch the news?
Well, I do actually. So I've just been writing a thing on, what's it called? 5 Secrets to Take You from Anxious to Zen. It's a little guide. But one of them is breathing. So I know we all breathe.
Don't stop breathing. That's the first thing. Don't stop breathing.
Just remember to. So often when we're really anxious, so we do stop breathing, we hold our breath.
Yeah.
You know, or sometimes people do it when they're concentrating on something, you know, they'll stick the tongue in and stop breathing. So when we and when we're anxious, we are frequently breathing from the top of our chest, so from up here, and like taking sips of air.
Yeah.
So if you think about a child sobbing, they're like this, and they're just taking sips of air from right up here, and they're not breathing properly. And so when we're anxious, we can find ourselves breathing from the top of our chest rather from deep down in our gut and down belly breathing. So if we can spend 5 minutes taking in, I'll tell you the process actually, it's quite useful. So it's from the multiple brain integration stuff that I also know about and used to teach. I'm focusing on NLP now. It's kind of a branch of NLP anyway. So we imagine, first of all, if we can think of something or somebody that we love unconditionally. So it could be a child, usually they're babies because people go, yeah, well, you know, I've got this kid and I love him most of the time, but then, you know, sometimes, right? Yeah. Or it could be a pet, or it could be a plant, anything that you can feel a sense of love and or appreciation, deep appreciation for. And what you do is you taking a deep breath, breathing into roughly a count of six. It could be five if you can't do six. And imagine breathing in from right down in your tummy and breathing into your heart. So I know you don't breathe into your heart, but you imagine that you're breathing into your heart. And as you're breathing in that sense of love and appreciation. And then when you breathe out to a count of six, you breathe that sense of love and appreciation into your gut, because this is where we often feel anxiety. So again, so we're breathing into a count of six and breathing in that sense of love and appreciation and then breathing it down into the gut. And sometimes people find it helpful to imagine the love and appreciation as a colour. So it could be, you know, pink. So you might be breathing in that sense of pink and breathing it into your heart, and then breathing it down into your gut. And if you do that for 5 minutes, what it does is it balances the autonomic nervous system.
For 5 minutes?
It's for 5 minutes. And the feeling that you get is a sense of nice peace and calm. And that can last for about 5 hours. So you could do it, you know, before you start work, for example, do it again at lunchtime, do it again in the evening. And it's very, so just to explain how that works. So when we are stressed, we activate the sympathetic nervous system. So a way to remember that is stress starts with an S, sympathetic starts with an S.
Okay.
So sympathetic nervous system, and that's when we're breathing in from the top of our chest. The parasympathetic nervous system begins with P, and peace begins with P. So when we activate the parasympathetic nervous system, we become more peaceful. Yep.
Yep.
So we don't want to be so peaceful that we fall asleep, except when we want to fall asleep.
Yep.
But we don't want to be so stressed that we can't function. So we want a nice balance between the two so we can function on a like an even keel. So by doing that breathing process for 5 minutes, I've got a little thing at home that I can measure people's heart rate variability. And when I first put them on it, it just clips on onto their earlobe,
yeah,
and then it connects to the computer. It's like this jagged line that's going up and down like this. I'm describing it to Aaron, but I know you can't see it.
Waving your arm around. Yes.
Waving my arm around, yeah.
The visual effect.
And after a couple of minutes, it starts to balance out a bit, so it's not as jagged. And after about 5 minutes, it's this nice sine wave, and that's when they're in this really peaceful, relaxed state.
Right.
And then that's the state that we're often in when we're in that state of flow, you know, when we're doing things and it's like, oh, my God, it's lunchtime and where did the time go?
And you're so productive.
I've got all this work done. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a really useful one to do, and it takes 5 minutes. It's not as quick as turning off the news, but it's 5 minutes, you know.
We do this. So you recommend doing this after every news bulletin?
The quickest one is the turn off the television.
Yeah.
That's the quickest one. This is 5 minutes to do. And there's some others as well, but that's probably that's a really good one. So, again, breathing in a sense of love and appreciation into your heart, imagining that you're breathing into your heart, and then breathing it down into the gut. And so it calms the gut, which is what causes the anxiety. And then and 5 minutes. You know, and that's 15 minutes a day. And you've got, yeah, this sense of peace and calmness.
Great.
And, you know, meditation will do the same things. People meditate, and that's another good way of doing things. But for those that don't, this is a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, folks, we've been talking to Stephanie Philp, and that's a good place. That's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Probably a good place to leave it.
Yeah.
Hopefully people could hear the birds tweeting in the background while we've been doing all this as well. It's a nice little touch that you get with the outside studio that you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah, that's true.
And it makes up for the truck noise.
It's a unique Aaron interview.
Yeah. Well, I said to you before when you came in, this came about because of our COVID policy, but I quite like having something different going on.
Yeah. Why not? It suits Raglan, doesn't it?
It does.
We're an alternative society.
I mean, it won't work in winter.
No, but when it's chipping it down in rain and everybody's shivering, you can hear the teeth gnashing.
Yeah. The electrical equipment really wouldn't like it out of here.
It's true.
That's my biggest concern.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you heaps for coming in.
Okay.
And I know
coming
you're
out, you mean.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. Getting out of your car and coming down to the outdoor studio. You normally have courses and things going on, but are they all on hold at the moment?
I've got my coaching course continuing, fingers crossed, on the 27th of March. This is the one that's I did 2 days before lockdown, and the guys are coming back to do another 9 days on the 27th of March. So.
Oh, right. Oh, quite
so
soon.
So I'm keeping fingers crossed that everything goes well for that. And then I've got practitioner course starting at the end of April. So people can go to insideyourmind.com and then training and see all about that.
Right.
But I haven't done any short courses because it's just too hard to organise in this climate, you know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we have what they've had overseas with the big Omicron spike and then everything calms down. We'll see how we go.
Yeah.
All right, Stephanie, thanks heaps for coming in.